Sarah Vaughan is possessed of a singing voice that one jazz critic described as quite simply the most stunning female musical instrument in the business today. Her style, unique, distinctively her own, is superimposed upon her rich, full voice that she controls as one would play a fine instrument. Sarah Vaughan is not one to bend with musical trends. Her solid reputation has been built in the two fields of jazz and popular music, and she's comfortable in either. For the past 30 years, she's been giving pleasure to millions through her concerts, her nightclub appearances, and her record albums. Miss Vaughan, when you're singing in a nightclub or in a concert, do you imagine you're singing to someone, or are you singing just to a group of people, or do you think about a person or an individual as you sing?
Well, it's sometimes you, whatever the problem or situation is, maybe you might have forgot to put on an earring or something, and the whole time you're singing, you might be saying, "Oh my God, I have no earrings on." Or sometimes, generally, I sing to the whole audience. Mm-hmm.
But your music is addressed to a large group. It's not addressed to an individual. You don't sing to a person or in that.
No, I sing to everyone.
You were interviewed on the radio yesterday, and people were calling in and saying they remember a particular night when they saw you sing. Each one, I suppose, had a different particular night, and I couldn't help but wonder whether you had particular nights that you remembered for some reason. Are there some nights that stand out? Or do you go to work every night and it's all pretty much the same?
No. There's some clubs you work, it's just a joy to go to work because the facilities are nice and the club owner is nice and you get treated.
With your kind of music, what kind of facility is most satisfactory to you?
Well, you really like a nice, comfortable dressing room because in between shows, if not, you have nowhere to go or you... You like a little privacy, which is, in fact, the club I just came from, you know, people could walk right in the dressing room. You know, and it was very small, and I talked about it the whole week I was there.
You did
talked about it so much.
I see.
And I think when I left, he said he will definitely have a new dressing room when I come
back. I was thinking of the auditorium itself. I suspect that you must sing under some circumstances where there's noise and so forth. And I should think that would be distracting to someone who is virtually a concert singer, as you are.
Well, it is, but I don't really run into that too much. Just a few places, and I have learned now how to say a little few things.
What do you say?
Well, I can. Somebody could be talking over there continuously, and you could see everybody looking over there and not saying nothing, sort of waiting for me to say something. And then when I do, I look over there and I say, "I don't see how you all could stand that. You're paying your money, and I keep hearing noises somewhere. Mm-hmm. If I was you, I'd really tell them to shut up." So all of a sudden, everybody says, "Will you shut up?" You know, and they wait for you, or whatever the situation is. You know, sometimes you make a joke out of it. You're kind of embarrassed, he or she, in some kind of way.
Are certain kinds of audiences better for you? Does it make you perform better?
A good one.
What's a good audience?
A good audience is the people who respond to whatever you do, and the little tricks I do, sometimes they notice them. Everybody says ooh and ah at the same time.
You like to have them say ooh and ah when you do these vocal tricks.
Ooh and ah. And most of all, I just like for them to be there.
Yeah, I suppose so. One jazz critic has said about your singing that it requires the discipline of listening. That it isn't something that to really fully appreciate Sarah Vaughan. That you have to listen because it is a skillful use of the vocal instrument.
Well, truthfully, I think any entertainer prefers that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I despise anyone that comes. Usually they sit ringside. I don't know how those people get those seats. They either get a ringside, they talk, or every now and then you get someone who sleeps.
Really?
Yes. Someone that's very drunk or something. And I have heard a couple guys so drunk they'd be snoring. I have fun with those.
You do?
Oh, God. I mean, you'll be sober one time I get finished. This is rather insulting, I'd say.
Aside from the dressing room and the creature comforts in these various places where you play, have there been, over the last 10 or 15 years, maybe even more than that, certain nights that you remember because a kind of magic happened to you in singing because of the audience or because of the whole atmosphere?
Well, I remember July 4th, I had a concert with Michelle Legrand with 35, 40 pieces, strings and all that. And we had two shows, one at 6 o'clock and one at 10. And the first show, I was very nervous. And when I came out, the audience was just fabulous. The standing ovation and all that sort of stuff, and screaming all through the show. And then my nerves had sort of calmed down, and I thought, well, gee, the second show couldn't be better than the first. And when I walked out for the second show, the whole place was standing up. And for 5 minutes, they just applauded.
What's this do for you as a singer?
Well, you want to stand there and boo-hoo, really.
You do?
Well, I just thanked them for the whole time. Just thanked them. Mm.
You came from a musical family, didn't you? That is, your mother and father were both musical. Your father was a guitarist, I understand.
Well, amateur. You know, around the house,
So that you grew up. You grew up with music, didn't you?
Played the piano a little bit. My mother sang in the church choirs. Mm-hmm.
You grew up in Newark,
New Jersey.
Uh-huh. And took piano lessons at a fairly early age. I suppose many young ladies do that, but you took piano for, 8 years, didn't you?
I have from 7 to 15, and I took organ for a couple of years. I played organ in church most of my young life, or piano. In school, I sang in choirs, a cappella choirs, and stuff like that.
Having taken up the piano and the organ, what switched you to singing? Of course, you said you did sing in the choir.
That's what I wanted to do when I was playing piano and organ, but nobody seemed to... I didn't sing much, just in the groups. Never alone.
Why did you want to sing?
Because I figured that I could.
And you wanted to prove it to yourself and to the world, I suppose.
But playing the piano and all that training and piano and organ is such a big help for singing, I sort of see a keyboard when I'm...
Do?
I can, if I get stuck right away, I can see the keyboard and get myself out of it.
You do use your voice almost as though it were a musical instrument. You certainly have,
well,
in jazz singing. And
what they tell me.
But would that just come naturally out of the sort of things you wanted to sing when you were young?
No, well, I started with Earl Hines Band, and they had such musicians as Charlie Parker.
Dizzy Gillespie,
and Benny Green, and Fats Navarro, many others. I sort of pattern myself after horns. I think of horns more than I do another voice, another person.
Of course, you don't play a horn, so if I ask you whether the voice has more flexibility, more possibilities than the horn, why...
He's got 10 fingers, and I only got one voice, so he can do much more than I can. I can hear somebody play something, and maybe 20 notes, and I might can pick two or three or four out of them and put it together. It might sound almost like it. You might recognize it. Mm-hmm. Good musician probably would recognize.
Before you got into Earl Hines Band, as a matter of fact, the way you got into Earl Hines Band was an amateur contest at the Apollo Theater in Harlem, was it not?
Yes, that was 1942. I really went to get the $10.
$10, is that the first prize?
The first prize in a week at the theater. I didn't
care. But you wanted the $10 and...
Sure, 18 in those days, $10 was nice.
Yes.
$10 a day, I don't know. it might not be able to get a tank of gas.
Did you grow up in fairly modest circumstances? It wasn't a poor family, was it?
No, we weren't poor. Poor. We weren't rich.
Yeah. We knew $10 was looked good.
We knew how to stretch a meal for a week. Mm-hmm. You know, and rice in this one day and then rice in something else the next day, and put them all together, you got a stew, I guess, or something. But we weren't there. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth.
No, not in Newark, certainly. No. Did you know what you wanted to do with that $10?
Probably come back and go buy some good old hot dogs they used to have in those days or stuff like that. You know how kids were.
How old were you?
18.
This is the same way that Ella Fitzgerald got started, too, was an amateur contestant.
Right down the street from the Apollo Theater. In fact, I imagine that theater then moved up to the street, too, and it was called the Apollo Theater. I think it was the Harlem, can't think of the name, the Harlem Theater or something like that.
What, do you recall what you sang that won the $10 in the week's
engagement? Yes, I should never forget it, Body and Soul. I played the piano.
Oh, you played the piano, too?
Played and sang.
Why will you not forget Body and Soul?
Well, how can you forget that?
That's right. True that is. Yeah. So you played for a week. Now, how did you get from playing a week at the Apollo Theater to an engagement with Earl Hines' band?
Well, during that week, well, you know, the funny thing, the first week I was supposed to be on, Cootie Williams' band was playing at the theater. And I was the last one on, and I was too late. You know, that's what they wanted, radio. I think from 11 to 12, 12 to 1 or whatever. And I had to be on the next week. And then next week, Earl Hines' orchestra was there.
Oh, he was the house band.
No, not house band. We have a different band every week.
Oh,
like
I
a
see.
Show.
Yes, I see.
And they have a show. And it went over nice, but during the week at the theater, Billy Eckstein, who was the vocalist with Earl Hines, came by to catch the show, and he went back and told Earl Hines about me. And within a couple of weeks, I was in show business. I had not planned this at all.
You hadn't?
I always wanted to be in show business one day, but I had no idea it would start that soon.
Did you plan to do something else in the meantime? Were you preparing to do anything else other than going to show business?
No, I wasn't preparing for nothing else. Just, I guess, a teenager. But I think that's my motto now. I never really plan. So I think of what I want, and I hope I get it, and I never worry too much about it. And eventually it happens.
Do you believe in a kind of a destiny that is going to happen anyway, and you might as well relax?
No,
and let
not
it happen
anyway. But I think if you wish hard enough, or think hard enough.
Positive.
Yeah, positive thinking. I think it happens.
Did you have any models, anybody that you really looked up to in music or outside music as a teenage girl?
Well, you know, during those days they had big bands.
Yes, and they sure did.
And I was a jitterbug then. All I wanted was to go out and catch a big band like Count Basie, Jimmy Longsford, Earl Hines. Gene Krupa, Tommy Dorsey, all those guys were around. And I just wanted to know when the next band was coming to town so I could get out there and kick up my heels.
How about singers? Didn't you have people that you say, most of us have models, who say, well, someday I want to be something like her or something like him?
I can always remember seeing Billie Holiday, I admired her very much.
Had you seen her in person?
No, not then. And I pattern myself mostly, I think, after horn players. I listen to them more so than singers. I listen to singers, too, and get a little bit of what they're doing and listen to something nice. And then I twist it around my way so it won't be recognizable.
No, you've developed a very distinctive style of your own. I'm sure you didn't do it just so it wouldn't be confuse anybody else. The Earl Hines band broke up, I guess, didn't it? Or at least Billy Eckstein formed his own band.
He formed.
A year after you began singing with Earl Hines. What happened that caused Billy Eckstein to form his own band?
Well,
Were there differences about style? Was there a change in music at this
point? No, I think he just wanted his, just wanted to have an orchestra. Mm-hmm. And when he left, I don't think that he knew everybody was going to follow him, but we did. I think practically the whole band left.
Why did you follow Billy Eckstein?
Well, everybody loved him so, and I think he was more for what we were doing then, the kind of music we were playing.
What kind of music was that?
Well, they called it everything, bebop or whatever. But to me, it was just plain good music. And
what is bebop or bop?
I couldn't tell you.
Nickname the Divine Sarah come out of bop?
No, that came later, Dave Garraway.
Oh, I see.
From Chicago.
Bop was just a form of jazz, I suppose.
Yeah, I never approved too much of titles and things they threw on. Good music. I just put it in a class with music.
Music is music.
Good country western, is good rock and roll, is good jazz. I've been called jazz singer and blues singer. I don't know why, blues singer.
What do you call yourself? Just a singer?
I just try to sing.
You not only try, you do it extremely well. Do you have do you favor a particular kind of song that seems to suit you best, or as a singer, do you feel that you should be able to sing everything?
I feel I should be able to sing everything.
I did see a quotation, however, about you that where you refused to sing Calypso at the Starlight Roof several years ago. This goes way back, I suppose. And you said that you couldn't do anything that that wasn't, that you didn't feel yourself.
No, I don't know that the way they talk. I think I made a record of it once. Mm-hmm. It was lousy. Mm.
It was.
Yeah, the West Indians must have laughed a lot.
Do you, lyrics, are they lyrics important to you? Since you model yourself after horn players, I should think that lyrics would be quite secondary to you.
Oh, no, they're first.
They are first.
Well, you have to make yourself clear, you know, get the S's and T's and the P's and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So that the lyrics are understood.
Yeah.
But they do have a real meaning to you as you sing.
Oh, certainly. Mm-hmm. There's some songs I recorded that I guess were pushed or shoved on me because they were supposed to be a hit or this or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I haven't heard of them since. But most of the songs I...
Do you choose most of your own?
Pick myself. Songs? Just get ready to say that. Mm-hmm. I pick them myself. And I have record companies who will suggest, or people bring in songs.
Are you able to recognize fairly quickly what it is that seems to suit you when they bring in a new song?
Sometimes you are. Sometimes you might hear something you don't like, and then you... I tell you what throws me off. Sometimes they bring in those demo records, you know. Mm-hmm. They usually have the worst people singing or playing on those records, and it just turns me off.
You can't quite get through to them.
Then I'll hear it maybe 6 months later, that same song, and I said, gee, where'd that song come from? And it's the same song, but done differently.
Do you have certain songs that you've recorded over the years that are your particular favorites?
I think everything I sing is my favorite.
It sounds as though it might be the case, too.
Because there's so many good songs.
Those days when you were playing with Earl Hines and later with Billy Eckstein, and you left Billy Eckstein after a short time, too, to go into solo concert, didn't you? Must have been great days for orchestras. It was wonderful musicians.
Oh, I'm so glad that I went through that. It was such a great experience.
What did it give you?
Well, I think a girl being on the road with 15 guys year in and year out ain't bad. And they taught me a lot. They all loved me very much. Mm-hmm. Sort of looked after me. Wouldn't let me do nothing wrong. They were like fathers. Mm.
You seem to be a fairly shy person. How do you feel as you step out on that stage when you open, for example, in a new room or step out on a stage in a concert, for example, do you feel up? Are you ready or
opening nights, I'm not too good. I'm a wreck.
I suppose the press is there to...
Yeah, with the papers and pencils out. Mm-hmm. They always tell you where they are. I always wish that no one would tell me who was out in the audience, because I tighten up.
You do.
But after that first show, first night, clear sailing.
Do critics and criticism bother you at all, or do you pay any attention to it?
Sometimes I do. It's not to the point that they don't like me. It's up to them. But when they say, you know, like, there was a write-up in the paper, where I'm working now, and they don't know the titles. What are you doing the rest of your life? All they had was, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. They don't seem to know what's going on, of the title of the song. I remember another incident, so I remember you. Well, the verse starts out, was it in Tahiti? And when I looked in the paper, that's what the guy had in the paper. She sang a beautiful song, Was It in Tahiti? So everybody was asking me, what's that song, Was It in Tahiti? I said, well, it's I Remember You, with the guy who didn't know. Hmm. They don't seem to know titles of songs. Hmm.
That does bother you. I've seen criticism written about you that says that you were using your voice superbly well, or this didn't suit your voice, your style didn't suit this number. that I should think that you might better judge for yourself, I suppose.
Oh, well, that's just a problem. They don't, well, they're probably telling the truth, I guess. That's the way they feel. Mm-hmm. So it's all right with me.
But you don't feel you have to alter your style in accordance with what critics say, or more importantly, what the audience says, whether they like something you did.
Well, I don't even pay any attention.
You do what you want to do.
Oh, you better believe it.
There was a quotation in a magazine article I came across from Frank Sinatra, who said, when he heard you sing, this was fairly recently, he wanted to slit his wrists, which I guess is terribly flattering to you, but he also said, Sassy has discovered the art of pure straight singing.
I can do that anytime. That's easy.
It is. Huh?
But, I don't know. Sometimes I can do a song tonight and twist it all around, and as a way, if I feel like not twisting it around tomorrow night, I just won't twist it around. I might just sing
so
the melody.
You do like a jazz musician. That is, you reflect your own mood of the moment and twist it around or not twist it around.
Test the audience out and see what how they are.
How do you know?
Well, you can tell a response. If you run a chord or something in a song and everybody says, oh, you know, you can tell that they know what's going on.
Yeah.
Or what kind of request they're asking for.
Oh, you do take requests.
Yeah, well, I don't. I mean, I don't make an announcement that I will, but they always holler out in the audience.
And I suppose
I like
this,
that.
You'd like that?
Yes.
And they ask for the songs, I suppose, the ones that they're familiar with, mm-hmm. that you've sung in the past that they particularly...
Yeah, I like that. That's
which ones do you usually get requests for?
Oh, you'd be surprised. Songs that you haven't sang since then.
Is that right?
Yeah, it makes you... Some songs that didn't even... Nothing happened. But there's a few people enjoyed.
When do you know when something happens? Do you sense it yourself?
You mean in the audience?
Well, yes, when you're singing and something, as you use the phrase, something happens. You said earlier that the audience will ooh and ah.
They'll respond.
That's when something happens. If you were singing alone and you didn't have an audience, would you know yourself when something happens and it all comes together somehow? Do you, when you're vocalizing and using these tricks and so forth, do some of them give you real satisfaction that say, wow, I wish I could do that again?
Well, sometimes you can tell by the reactions of the musicians that's behind you.
You do trust those reactions,
don't
you?
Oh, yeah. I think I'd be very hurt if the musicians didn't dig what I was doing.
Uh-huh. How do you feel about money?
Money?
You like it, I suppose.
I love it.
Yeah.
I just adore money.
But you don't work just for money.
Of course.
When do you make enough?
Of course, or
is there ever enough?
There never will be enough money.
Because you.
Do I sound terrible?
No, I don't think so. And
money, I can do. I can do things. I can make people happy. My mother's with me. I have a home. I need new rugs.
Is that what happiness?
Need new draperies, and they're expensive. Yeah, you know, you need money to do
sure.
those things. I like to plant the gardens and the stuff. You got to pay for all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Is that happiness to you, having a home? Home is
yeah, being
a place
able to
go back to?
Being able to get what you want when you want it. I remember when I wanted things and I just had to wait and didn't know when I was going to get it. Mm-hmm. In fact, two things I want right now, I have to wait until I...
Is that right?
You know, the money is I don't mean
but
that...
But wanting, I suppose, is kind of important, too. If you stop wanting, I suspect...
If I wanted a castle and I couldn't get it now, I'd have to wait and work hard to get it. So that means money,
mm-hmm.
you see, I think. I don't mean that I just like money so I could buy me...
But you like work as well.
Oh, I love it. Mm. Oh, how could I get the money?
Mm-hmm.
Do you
ever think about retiring at all?
Never. Never. People retire, they die. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed?
Yes, I have.
So I figure if I don't retire, I'll be here a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to be.
You said at one point that money goes with no sleep, as though you worried sometimes about making money. But you probably don't even recall having said that. I dug that out of an old magazine.
Oh, I don't think
but
so.
But it isn't a matter of worry to you to have to...
No. If I want something, like if I, maybe I want to buy my daughter, and she gets 16 years old, maybe I want to buy a car or something.
You maybe want her to have the things that you didn't have?
I want her to have what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I didn't have, it doesn't, I don't think would have anything to do with her.
Would you like to have her go into music as you have done?
I want her to do what she wants to do. Right now, she's just does gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
And she does modern dancing and all that sort of thing.
But you want her to be what she wants to be?
Just, I have nothing to do with that. That's up to her.
Thank you very much, Sarah Vaughan.
You're quite welcome.
I will say goodbye. I will walk away. I will speak the word you would have me say. I will walk alone. I will not look back, for I turn to stone. More than just farewell, more than just goodbye, it will be as if we'd never met.